Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, thank you for that. We really appreciate it. Wherever you are, however you're listening, radio, internet, subspace frequency, we don't care. And whenever you're listening, we're glad you're here. Mike Menzies is our guest. He's an old friend and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's the president of Eastern Bank and Trust, one of those beautiful little community banks over in the Eastern Shore. There are a lot of beautiful little independent community banks all over the country. They're some of small businesses' best friends, and they're all run by really cool guys like Mike Menzies. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. It's good to be back. A long time since I've been referred to as a cool guy, but I'll accept that.
No. We say that about you all the time around
you do.
Here.
Actually, yeah, I went to my 40th high school reunion at Fox Lane in New York.
Do your worst.
Yep, and they were all looking at me saying, boy, have you gotten old. I didn't have anybody say you're a cool guy.
Of course, you graduated from high school when you were 12, right?
Yeah, listen to this.
Well, it's good to have you back, Mike, and I want to talk about a couple of things today. I want to just get you to give us a little bit of a checkup on how things are going for small business and banking. And also, this is going to be kind of a Sarbanes-Oxley kind of day, folks, because I've got a CPA friend, Fred Marmon, who's going to be with us in the next hour, who wants to talk about Sarbanes-Oxley. And Mike is a complier, has been a complier of Sarbanes-Oxley. And we're going to talk about that. But, Mike, I tell you, I think what I'd like to do, before we get to the Sarbanes-Oxley, I think I'd like to move it to the end, toward the end of the visit. And let's do a little bit of a tune-up on how small businesses are doing. Here are the two areas that I see that are really challenging right now for small businesses. Number one is interest rates have gotten up again. Prime is now at, 6.25%,
yep.
I think.
And
so that means – for small businesses, that means we're borrowing money at 7.25%, 8.25%, 9.25%, and the dreaded 4+, prime +4, 10.25%. And that's a big issue right now. We're starting to see the interest rates on the money we borrow from banks to cut into our profit margin a little bit. And number two, and this is the double whammy part, this is the second of the 1-2 punch for small businesses right in the old solar plexus, and that's the price of petroleum. How are these things affecting your customers these days, Mike?
Well, remember that we live in a retirement community that's very much driven by real estate, and the infrastructure of our economy is very much driven by the retirement and the ag market. So there are different impacts that oil at $62 plus has, but clearly oil is going to continue to trickle into the cost of all goods and services in this economy.
It's the oxygen of the marketplace.
Yeah, it really is. It frankly somewhat amazes me that it has not trickled in more and faster.
Right.
It has not. It has not reduced our driving or our spending. We continue to be a consumption-driven economy, almost like there's no tomorrow. But oil will eventually whittle its way in, and it will continue to impact the price of everything, I believe. And with that said, there are many who truly believe that we're at the peak of oil, except for T. Boone Pickens, who's guaranteed us it's going to hit $150 a barrel within 12 months. But I'm sure there's nothing.
Is he reporting this from the old folks' home?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think he's reporting that from the nurse. I shouldn't say that.
He doesn't have any personal motivation there. But
No, of course not.
But the interest rate issue I'll go to, which is that that in reality – all business should pass the cost of their business on to the consumer. Now, whether they do it or not is another thing, but all businesses should pass the cost of all inputs on to the consumer. And if that's the case, then the cost of interest or the cost of money and the cost of oil is eventually going to be passed on to the consumer. And if it arrives there, the consumer, when it consumes too much income, is going to stop spending.
Right.
And that's going to cause the economy to back off, and that's going to put Father Greenspan and his associates in a position where they can feel that they don't have to raise rates anymore.
But the thing is, I'm concerned about that, and we'll have our FedWatch show tomorrow, mm-hmm. because the Fed meets this week. But what I'm concerned about is that small businesses are never as able to raise prices as quickly as they need to. You know that, and we wind up taking the first blow.
I agree with you, Jim, but I would argue that that a competitive disadvantage that's evidenced by small businesses is a lack of willingness to increase.
To try. And I tell you something else.
The big businesses are going to do it. The big businesses are going
right.
to pass it on.
And let me tell you what else small businesses don't do a good job of, and that's making small incremental increases. They're more likely to make larger ones.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be better off to make smaller incremental ones instead. Stand by. Quick break. Right back with Mike Menzies. It's 20 Till. Stay with us. We're back at 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate, and Mike Menzies is our guest, our good friend, president of Eastern Bank and Trust in Eastern Maryland, beautiful downtown Eastern Maryland, over on the Eastern Shore. I've been there. I promise you, it is beautiful. And, Mike, we're talking about small businesses and the challenges that they face. You know, in a lot of ways, the surveys that we're reporting on the NFIB survey, the Tatum Partners survey that we do, both of those once a month. We're going to be doing a survey in the next hour, reporting on a small business survey with the Administaff, with the CEO of Administaff, Paul Sarvati. And that survey shows, all three of those surveys show, that small businesses are doing pretty darn well.
Absolutely.
But yeah. we've got these other challenges that I was amazed like you that petroleum wasn't hurting us more. That I was surprised that it wasn't hurting us more, but the increased prices. But our economists explained to us that one of the reasons is because petroleum is about half of our GDP that it was, say, 10, 20 years ago. Where it's a much smaller part of our overall production. And we're producing it, our economy, with half the petroleum, relatively speaking, adjusted for size and everything, and so that's one of the reasons why it's not having the same impact. But it's cold comfort when it costs $50 to fill up your tank, isn't it?
Yes, and while I can understand the productivity arguments that the economists have been advancing, my personal view is at some point in time, your heat and your lighting and your automobile power is going to creep into disposable
right.
income, and it's just got to, in my opinion. Not that I am a seasoned economist, but when I went to New York, it was $2.87 for a gallon of regular.
Wow.
That's pretty salty.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's rough. And especially if you got a fleet of trucks or fleet of salespeople on the road, and of course anything, even if you don't, if you have deliveries, mm-hmm. people who are delivering things to you, they've got to raise their prices, which is where we left it when we took the break, Mike. And what do you think about when you see small business owners that come to you to do business with you? Are you seeing them being reluctant to raise prices?
Yes, I think that small business owners believe too frequently that their competitive advantage has to do with price,
mm-hmm.
And I've often advocated that that on the price service curve, the small business needs to sell service before price, and it needs to pass its input costs on to the consumer.
Right.
And if it can't justify that, then it's going to lose its competitive advantage. That Michael Porter wrote a wonderful book, Harvard professor, called Competitive Advantage, and it begins by saying, if you don't have a competitive advantage, don't compete.
Right.
And I don't believe that price is the competitive advantage for small business.
It can't be.
Relationship and service. It can't be.
Because the price war is over and we lost.
That's absolutely. And we're not getting it back. We're not taking on Walmart and the Home Depots of the world. They're gonna rule the cost, volume, profit equation of throughput through price. We are going to have to win on service. And that's why there's so many community banks that are still out there
mm-hmm.
that do well, is that people don't go to a community bank because they have the highest CD rate and the lowest loan rate. They go to a community bank because they know they're going to get their questions answered and they're going to have a relationship. Simple as that. And the same applies to retail and to other small businesses.
You know, I spoke with a I've been doing a lot of work with banks over the last few years, and a recent, fairly recent conversation with a banker. We were talking about banks adding value to their relationships by adding different services, and they were saying, you know, we can't afford this. I said, well, charge the customer for it.
Yeah.
And he said, but you know, they already don't like our fees. Well, how can we charge them more? And I said, if your customers are a small business loan customer is not going to do business with you because you charge them $50 for an extra service that nobody else is offering, then you're not taking care of that customer right.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that
and of course, I'm the last person, Mike, to recommend that a bank charge a small business more. But value, you know, let's pay for what for the value that we get.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, that, again, is the competitive advantage of all small business is defining your value, your value proposition, and having it of value. And if it's not of value, you shouldn't compete.
Well, Sarbanes-Oxley, I'm going to make a pretty quick segue here, Mike.
Okay.
Sarbanes-Oxley, what kind of a value was it to you? Now, you recently took your bank private from having been public, didn't you?
Yes, we did, and we delisted the company. And
how much of a reason was Sarbanes-Oxley for that decision?
I'd say that more than half of the rationale to go private was the cost of Sarbanes-Oxley.
Remind the audience what Sarbanes-Oxley is.
Well, Sarbanes-Oxley is what I would loosely refer to as the Enron legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Sarbanes, a great senator from the state of Maryland, who has always been an advocate for the little guy, quite frankly.
Right.
And a gentleman named Michael Oxley basically became fed up with corporate corruption at sort of the Enron level.
And it was a reaction to Enron.
It was a reaction. And in my opinion, with all due respect to a great senator, it was an effort to legislate morality. And,
right.
And I don't know that that's ever worked. Excuse me. I think that the cost of Sarbanes-Oxley for the little guys, for the companies that are tweeners, if you will, that have less than, say, $10 million of market capitalization, was just horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And
for the bankers?
Well, not just for the bankers. I mean, there's some 1,800 small businesses mm-hmm. that have gone private, that have delisted to get
right.
out from underneath these onerous SEC costs associated with Sarbanes-Oxley.
Anything that the Sarbanes-Oxley folks went through Congress and was signed in 90 days, was it about 4 years ago? I guess 3 years ago. Anything that the Congress does in 90 days can't be a good thing. It's got to be dangerous. And I said that at the time. Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back with Mike Menzies. Stay with us. I'm the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Mike Menzies is our guest. I'm glad he's here, too. He's the president of Easton Bank and Trust. Mike, give us the website, please.
There you go, eastonbankandtrust.com.
It's not your grandfather's independent community bank website, folks. This is a hot website, eastonbankandtrust.com.
That's right, and we have internet banking, and it is slick, let me tell you.
All right. I told you Mike was a cool guy. Mike, back to Sarbanes-Oxley.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, when all the corporate malfeasance hit, and Mike, what I like to remind people is there are approximately 15,000 publicly traded companies in America, and all of the things that's happened since, 2001, I guess, there have been maybe a dozen or so companies that have really been, you know, in the headlines of doing some really horrible things. And I did the math on that, and it worked out to be like 8/10,000ths of a percent of the companies that were, you know, that were doing this. Now those companies who did that, WorldCom and Adelphia and Enron, they were pretty big companies, and there were some pretty big losses for the investors and for the employees. But still, the reaction that Congress made when they passed Sarbanes-Oxley, in my opinion, it wasn't thoughtful at all. It was an absolute knee-jerk reaction, and we're all paying the price for it today, aren't we?
Yes, it's classic government, you know, what's the third greatest lie? I'm here from the government, and I'm here to help you.
Right, right.
But the reality is, just as you said, Jim, was that it was an effort, understandable effort, not finding fault with those representatives who were tired of corporate executives plundering the resources of their stockholders. I mean, it's embarrassing that it's gone on. But the difference between the governance of an Easton Bank and Trust with $12 million of capital and a $120 million bank and a board of directors that lives in the town that banks all of our customers, and Global Crossing and Adelphi and Enron and MCI and long-term capital. I mean, it's night and day.
Right.
And the issue is there a way to allow Small Business America to continue to form capital and grow under the weight and the burden of legislation like this, which is huge? And the answer is bifurcate the system. Say that that if you have less than 50 or $100 million of market capitalization, which in today's world is a drop in the bucket, then you're not subject to this stuff.
How much is the number again?
Maybe 50 million. You might start at 50 million in market capitalization.
Anything under 50 million in market capital.
Then you don't have to deal with this stuff. Just take it off the radar screen. You don't have to have you don't have to go out and hire independent financial experts to sit on your audit committee. Things like that. You know, the composition of Sarbanes-Oxley is appropriate, and it says that there should be good corporate governance in so many words, and it says there should be separations of duties, and that the CEO shouldn't hire the auditors and tell the auditors what to do. I mean, the content of the legislation is totally appropriate. But you can't legislate morality, and that's what this legislation attempts to do.
Mike, my next guest in the next hour is Fred Marmon, who's a CPA, and his firm is Sarbanes-Oxley Expert, and he's helping independent. He's helping mostly smaller, I think, publicly traded companies all over the country comply with Sarbanes-Oxley, and he's going to tell us that Sarbanes-Oxley is a good thing. I believe that's what he's going to say in the next hour. What would you say to him?
I would say that the other name for the Sarbanes-Oxley Act is the Economic Relief Act for CPAs.
He's probably listening right now. I hope he is.
Sarbanes-Oxley, the intent is not bad by any stretch of the imagination. It's appropriate. The question is, can you legislate morality? And for the accountants of the world, it is, in fact, their job to look to see whether there is adequate segregation of duties and whether there is adequate corporate governance. And Sarbanes-Oxley gives a bit more strict guidelines on how you go about interpreting that. But if you're going to kill small businesses because they've lost part of their competitive advantage because their prices are just being pushed out of the competitive world, because of legislation like this, then you're not helping America.
Well, that's
you're not
one
helping
of the thing,
jobs either.
That's one of the things I'm going to be talking to him about is you know, does this take off the table one of the long-term goals for a lot of small businesses, and that's ultimately to go public and to get some cash for the founders. Hey,
well,
Mike, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
It's always good to be with you, Jim.
Good to be here. Good
we'll
to have you
some-
here.
We'll keep some crabs for you at the end of the
day. I appreciate it. I'm going to come over there and get those things pretty soon. Thanks,
okay.
Mike. Mike Menzies, ladies and gentlemen, our favorite banker. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.